There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along. Another couple hours of live local talk. And, of course, you're a big part of it at 343-0106. That works for a phone call or a text. And reminder, if you got the brand new FM Talk 106.5 app, and if you don't, well, remedy that. It's free. It's waiting for you. Just search for FM TALK 1065 on Google Play for Android users or the App Store for iPhone users. But if you've got the app there, you'll see the microphone icon on the front page. If you'll press that, you can leave us a message. It sends it right here to the studio, and we can play it back during the show. One of the many, many features on the brand new FM Talk 106.5 app. So check it out. All right, and it is the second Tuesday of the month, and we'll get to talk to Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. But I want to start off with this that happened today. Mobile Police Major Paul Prine was officially named the city's new police chief today. And y'all listen to this segue. The man that held that job at one point gets to react to it. Now Sheriff Sam Cochran.
Well, congratulations to him. I don't know him personally very well. He worked for me many years ago. And in fact, I was a police chief when he was shot on duty one night and went over to Gwen's Lounge where we had to go in and rescue some others that were shot. And so I remember
what
that
year
night.
Was that? I mean, that. That's foggy. That's way back.
Yeah, it was. I can tell you it was between 96 and 2006.
Right.
I'm guessing somewhere around 2002 or something. He and two other officers were ambushed when they were responding to a shooting in there, and he's very well respected. And of course, the couple of situations I've seen him on TV already, he presents himself very well, has a good presence about him, and so I hope that he can grow into the job really well and be a good chief for us.
You know, something you've said in the past when we just talk about law enforcement in general, or specifically your deputies or police officers or whatever, is institutional wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been talking about it on individual officers or deputies, kind of how we looked at it and dealing with. But what about in management? Because this is law enforcement management, right?
Well, it absolutely is, and of course he's moved up the chain of command pretty quick. And of course this is a big jump for him, I think, because I believe he was I'm not sure if he's a major or a captain.
Major.
Yeah, okay,
major.
But he hasn't been a major that long, I don't think. But
right.
So he's if he's up for the job, he's up for the job, and. But that's one of the problems with the police department. We all know they've had a high turnover since way back in my days.
Mm-hmm.
It's never really slowed down. And when you have an attrition rate of about 10% a year, you know, your whole police department's turning over every 10 years. And so you don't have that 15, 20, 25-year veteran that can teach that 1 or 2-year rookie the ins and outs. I mean, there's some things that you only know from firsthand experience and, you know, teach people, but so that's a struggle there, in my opinion. But
is that attrition level, that 10%, the same when you start moving up into, you know, somebody who's a major or something? You see what I'm saying? I mean, is that attrition level for first, second year officers, or is that attrition level hold true through the?
Well, I think you end up seeing a younger management group when you do have high attrition. I mean, there's some that will hang on and last it out, if you would, to make a whole career. Obviously, their chances are better because, you know, what they start out and they stick with it. But, you know, it's a young man's game now also. And, of course, education and technology mm-hmm. play such a big role in it nowadays than what happened 40, 50 years ago or even 30 years ago. So there's an advantage to some people. Younger people generally have a better ability to pick up on IT and stuff like that. And so much of what we do in law enforcement today is benefited from the use of technology.
Talk about the raise, and I know we're, you know, having you comment on MPD as the sheriff, but mm-hmm. Raising the salary. there for Mobile Police Department, this discussion, does that help stem this attrition rate?
I think in the long haul it does, but now we've got to go back many, many years, and for whatever reason, historically, South Alabama and the southern part of the country, but particularly here in South Alabama, our law enforcement have been woefully underpaid, and so when they've got some considerable raises, as we have in the last few years, it's made a difference. But, you know, if you want a professional police force where people are not leaving after 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, then you've got to pay good benefits, good salary and good benefits. And then you want to keep and retain those good ones, and you want to weed out the bad ones. And, of course, I've spent a career, 25 years now, weeding out bad officers, either officers or deputies. And what you want to do is weed them out, but you don't want to replace them with another bad officer. And when you have a high turnover rate, there's going to be some more slip in the door on you. What if you hire 50 to 75 officers every year, 4 or 5 of them are going to not be cut out for the job.
And then if when you replace them, then, the chances.
And that, then you use 50 to 70, then you hire 50 to 75 the next year because you've lost so many good officers that quit. You're going to always have some bad ones slip in on you. Or and I maybe use that word too harshly to say bad ones, but maybe just those that are not cut out for that line of work. And sometimes you don't know it until you actually face those real stresses on the street or middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning, stopping a car with 3 or 4 bad guys. It's not for everybody.
You ever have people tell you that, hey, Sheriff, I thought I was cut out for this, but I'm not leaving for any reason, but I'm just, this isn't for me.
You know, we've got a big challenge in the jail right now, corrections officers.
Yeah.
That's a good starting salary, $51,000 a year right now. You can start
as a corrections officer. Yeah, but it's a tough, I mean, that's
it's a tough job, and we had somebody came to work, left for lunch, and never came back last week. You know, just was on the job. Just, nope, this isn't for me. And we'd already, you know, when we hire somebody, we now walk them through the jail, let them meet some of our employees and try to give them an idea of what they're in store for. But it's a challenging, it's the most challenging since I've been sheriff for 15 years now. The jail for the first 13, 14 years to me was not that great of a challenge. But since COVID hit and the court system sort of slowed down or shut down and crime, for whatever reason, seems to be going up somewhat on violent crimes. We've got not the most numbers in jail I've ever had, but the most serious people in jail I've ever had.
Are those people that should be in prison at ADOC facilities?
They should have gotten on through the system. We have, 3 weeks ago, I had the numbers. I think it was 27 people in jail right now facing capital murder charges. And at that time, 127 murderers in jail facing murder charges.
Wow.
Just one of them killed another one, so it went down by one. But I've seen we've added about 4 since then, so we're hitting it around 130. So, and then there's another maybe 100 murderers that are out on bond, and the cases are not going through the court. And so we, you know, internally in the jail, we've got the meanest bunch of folks we've ever had. And how do you make somebody stay in line when they say, what you going to do to me? Send me to the penitentiary? I'm already looking at life or death,
right?
You know, or life without parole. So what are you going to do to me? And you know, we can put them in timeout type kind of stuff and segregate them a little bit, but we're limited by federal law how long we can, you know, hear the old saying, put them in the tank or something like that. We're limited how long we can do that. We take away their goodies, you know, they can't buy supplies or whatever, but then others will buy it, or they'll, through threat of coercion, you know, somebody else will provide them with their snacks.
So you have how many that are charged with murder in the jail right now?
Approximately 130 charged with murder and 27 charged with capital murder.
So out of how many total inmates?
This morning we had 1,560-something.
And 127?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now we've got 100-something people in there for robbery first degree, which, you know, is a violent offense. And we've got others in there for attempted murder. We've got rapists and some of these fellows don't get along with each other.
Yeah.
And so we have to segregate them from each other, but there's only so much space we can segregate these bad boys. So it's, like I say, it's a challenge, and we need help. It's a good-paying job. It's got good benefits. But it is a challenge, and I salute the men and women down there today that work in that jail. They're doing the yeoman's work, you know. Unbelievable.
Well, okay. The other side of this for attrition is we hear cases or stories from around the country where, because of vaccination mandates in other states, that big portions of Seattle, one of them, their police department are going to retire.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you're losing tons of institutional wisdom at that point. I mean,
you're leaving because you're forcing something on them. You know, I've seen some of these companies rethink that policy. And I think you're going to see more. And, you know, I've been listening to your news stories about, was it Southwest Airlines or something like that?
The sick out,
You know it's a sick out. It's not just traveling problems.
Right. Of course,
I mean,
it is.
We've had no hurricanes or storms or nothing
right.
like that.
Right.
It's too early for the winter storms.
But that, I mean, that situation, you already have this ongoing issue of recruiting because of the politics of the time and all those things. At the same time, you have the fear with vaccine mandates in other places. You have not set a vaccine mandate for
We have not, and we've got pretty high numbers with our employees. You know, the first round or something, we've got a better than average in law enforcement. Then the second time around with the COVID, the Delta variant, we had a number of people get really, really sick, and they came back to work, and they were the best promoters of the vaccine, saying, you don't want what I have or had, and that's really worked out well. And so we're doing good. But let me brag on this, and this has been 2 weeks ago, I guess, the update. We had vaccinated 2,200 inmates.
Yeah, you said, I think, what, the jail was the most vaccinated place in Mobile County?
Yeah. I think right now we have zero infections right now.
Wow.
In the jail. We'd gotten up to around 110, 112 about 6 weeks ago, maybe. And I don't know the name of the equipment, but we were turned on to this new system where it's an aerosol, but it's not wet. It's some kind of salt itemizer or something. And we spray every day, and it makes a cloud. You can breathe the cloud. It doesn't hurt you, and it apparently kills any kind of virus. And we went from 110, 112 down to zero in, I think, 3 weeks.
Wow.
So the wardens believe this is what caused it.
So, I mean, is this something that would be available for outside of jails,
I'm sure. Okay. I think some hospitals use it, or maybe all the hospitals, but there's something to it. At least we believe it is. The wardens believe that's what turned it around for us.
I want to ask you, and we'll probably run up to the break here, but continue it. Discussion about prisons and the overall, and I want to talk about the prison bill. But also this sentencing question. I mean, here we have an officer in Sheffield, Alabama, that was killed by somebody who was out.
Got 10 years for murdering his father, wasn't it? Or killing his father and got 10 years served.
And also, while what I think is important, while in prison was not a model prisoner.
Yes.
You know, you might say somebody killed the father. I mean, I don't understand the situation, but it could have been something that, you know, that person's not going to be a threat to anybody else except that person. But they were not a model prisoner. They were trouble, and they were out. And there's an officer that didn't go home, and others wounded because of that.
That's right. It's awful.
So, as they talk about this prison issue, we've got the brick-and-mortar issue. Mm-hmm. That's one of them. And that's the easiest one to focus on in building, and we're going to build the new prison. But there's a whole other part of this where a discussion of sentencing reform. Well, if we're already at a place where a 10-year sentence really means 3 years, how much other leeway is there?
Exactly. The people are giving you lip service when they're just not being truthful to you when they, you know, let people out and they give a 15, 20-year sentence, but really it doesn't mean 15 or 20 years. I give you a 10, as we found out. It doesn't mean a 10. It means a 3. It's so confusing, and you've got the ones on the left are pushing to let more people out, the progressives, as they call it. And we know from history that if you keep bad boys locked up, you're going to have less crime. Mm-hmm. And there are some people, and we've got some in our jail, as I mentioned earlier, that should never see the light of day.
Right.
I mean, they're just – we have
no
some of the meanest, most deviant people come through that jail that over time they get to the penitentiary where they need to be. And if you add like 100 or 200 or 300 of those a year at the state level – eventually, you're going to have a bunch in prison that absolutely don't need to come. They don't have people for marijuana up in prison hardly at all.
And a lot of people, say,
people like to say that's just not true.
Yeah, and listen, I've talked to so many. I've had one or two say that it is true, but the people I've talked to from the state level to you said that's not actually true, that it's not nonviolent drug offenders in there.
Right, and you've heard it from some of the ones that are involved in the sentencing committees and stuff. They've finally come out and I think I've heard some finally speaking the truth, saying, look, the majority of the people in prison are violent, deviant criminals.
Just flapping gums when we say sentencing reform is going to solve this population problem? Because we're already letting somebody out at 3 years
thousands.
Who had a 10-year sentence.
We're already down several thousand in the state penitentiary population than what we were a few years ago.
Right.
So, okay, why we got to keep trying to add to taking more away? You know, you let some of these serial burglars, you know, you let one of them out that needs, you know, after 6 months or a year, he'll commit another 30, 40, 50 burglaries, and we catch him again, send him off for a few months again. But he may do $200,000 worth of thefts or damages, mm-hmm. and to keep him in the penitentiary is somewhere around $14,000-$15,000 a year. It's a whole lot cheaper to do that, and the people that see their records would appreciate them staying longer.
You know, you've said that in the past too. When we look at, for example, you said burglary, mm-hmm. we'll look at burglary numbers. And you'll see it's X number of cases of burglary.
Yeah.
Somebody like me who's not in law enforcement thinks of them almost as individual burglaries, right? Mm-hmm. They are, but I mean, that's a person assigned to each one of those burglaries, where in fact, you've said over time, it's a smaller number doing a big number burglaries.
Exactly. One burglar doesn't commit just a couple of burglaries. He does it every couple of days and continuously until he gets caught. Because usually, as we know,
so you can affect the numbers quickly by taking that person off the streets.
Yeah, exactly. Now, that's one thing, going back in history, I remember my early days as a patrolman, we would sometimes arrest somebody, and they'd then confess, and they'd go point out 100-and-something houses that they'd burglarized. That's a rarity today because of technology. We generally catch somebody way before they commit that many burglaries. But they'll still commit 15, 20, maybe 25.
We're coming right back. More of our conversation with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Your chance to ask the sheriff. You can hop on the line now, 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. And it's your chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest. Y'all can hop on the line now at 343-0106, 343-0106. This is good. This is a addendum text to a conversation we had in the past about concealed carry. This texter says, I wanted to thank the sheriff for information on how that if there was an appeal process to get your pistol permit because of a derogatory action on your record. I was able to gather the stuff up and go see the appeal process and get my pistol permit. Thank you, sheriff.
Good. Congratulations.
So if somebody is denied, mm-hmm. and you go, I shouldn't have been denied, there's a process to appeal that.
Yeah.
Okay, so people know that. Good. So it worked out in that. This is a quick question. So Fred asked, I need my fingerprints taken for another state's engineering license. Daphne won't do it due to COVID-19. Can the sheriff help me out?
Yeah, we fingerprint people. I think there's a small fee, but our identification section can print them, and we'll let them come in the building.
All right. Texter says, social justice warriors keep the jail officers from properly dealing with the trouble. Not?
Well, I properly dealing with the trouble, I mean, the social justice workers keep people out of jail, I guess.
Right.
But once they're in jail, I mean, our corrections officers are able to deal with them, but it's difficult.
Truth in sentencing. We talked about it before the break.
Yeah, those terms have been thrown around
truth
so long.
Truth in sentencing.
Like there's no truth in sentencing under the state system.
If now, you get 10 years and you're out at three. Yeah, explain that. So
the federal government years ago did away with parole and stuff. You just get a definitive time, and then or probation they did away with. You get a definitive time, and when you're released, some of them stay on what they call supervised intensive release. But if you get so many days or years in prison, you serve the time that they give you. Now, here in the last 2 years, I guess, with COVID, there were some amendments made. And of course, I think even under President Trump's last term that they were able to shorten some of the terms, I believe. But for the most part, you know, when you get a sentence in federal prison, it's a real sentence. And you've seen some of our elected officials have been sentenced. They got, Scrooge and some of the others, got so many years and they served those years.
Yeah. And to think about, if they get let out. Once again, I believe that people should serve their time. Mm-hmm. But they get out; they're not killing an officer in Sheffield.
Right. And they're still under some of the crimes that they commit. They stay on, very specific supervision by the federal probation officers.
If we know somebody's going to end up with a 10-year sentence, going to get out in three. If we mm-hmm. know that, I think as a citizen, I want to be told that.
Yeah,
when
sure.
they sentence in the news story and they say so and so sentenced to 10 years. But then put some caveat, but if they do X, Y, and Z, they'll be out in three. And the people need to know that.
They do, and I think gradually it's breaking down those barriers and getting in those systems. It's been so difficult to be able to make that public because the system used to be so closed
mm-hmm.
and that a reporter or even an individual or a police officer would have trouble trying to find out just what someone got and what they were serving.
I mean, I think if the public heard in a lot of these cases that, well, in reality, that means 3 years for this person for murder.
Yeah. People would be astounded.
Up in arms is what they'd be. Coming right back, have more of your texts and phone calls for the sheriff. Your chance to ask the sheriff right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, and it's your chance to ask the sheriff on Midday Mobile. Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest. Our phone number, 343-0106, 343-0106. And a lot of texts coming in here. Let me get through these. Brandon asked, how early can we renew our pistol permit? Mine doesn't expire until November, but while I'm thinking about it, can he do it early?
He can go online and should be able to go online and renew it. I don't know if there's a certain date that prohibits him, but I'd recommend he go online and try to renew it then.
Fred said, so are the inmates getting the J&J vaccine since it seems like it'd be problematic to get them to return for their second shot?
Yeah, I think it's predominantly, if not all, are J&J vaccines, which, you know, it's just a one-time shot. And so a lot of them we've given the shots to have gotten out on bond or may have served the time, but we obviously encouraged as many of them that would take it, and we even sweetened the pot and gave them some free snack packs early on if they would take the shot.
So Grant says, I personally thank you, sir, for you and your deputies doing a great job. And then goes on to say, people out on bond for violent crime and commit another violent crime before trial? Just saying. I mean, this is what Anaya's Law is about.
That's what Anaya's Law is about. And so next November, we'll have an opportunity to vote on Anaya's Law, which we had to change the Constitution to allow judges to deny bond on certain type of violent offenses, particularly in cases where someone's out on bond and commits another offense. Although some cases, whether that not on out on bond or not, they need to be held without a bond not give them a second chance to commit another crime until, you know, they've had their day in court.
Help us out with a little better in-depth understanding of that, because it doesn't require the judge to do that, right?
Anybody but someone charged with capital murder is due a bond.
Okay.
So if you commit a murder or a rape or a robbery, you're eligible for a bond. Get out. And if you know somebody that's committed one of those crimes, and if everybody knows that they're going to do it again, mm-hmm. but the judge under law still has to set a bond. Now, different justice in different counties, okay?
Meaning what?
Well, meaning, say, Mobile County, I would say we used to think it was sort of dumbed down. If you got arrested in Mobile County or something, you might have a $20,000 bond. Okay. If you got arrested in Baldwin County, you probably have a $100,000 bond for a robbery first, because just different set of jurors over there. Now, of course, I don't want to beat up our judges too much. They're following, I think, the guidelines that are put out by the Administrative Office of Courts on what the recommended bail amounts are. But judges don't have to hold to those bail bonds. And so a lot of judges say, not in my county, you know, and they'll set a high bond. So Anaya's Law was where a young lady was brutally murdered, and the guy that had done it had attempted to kidnap and assault another female and made a bond, a big bond, a couple hundred thousand dollar bond, I believe, but then got out and killed Anaya. And so that got the push going, to say, hey, this guy's original crime was so bad, we should have been able to hold him.
Even though it wasn't capital murder.
Even though it wasn't capital murder. But see, if it had been capital, you could have. So now, and it's still the way the law is written, that a judge, you know, the district attorney will have to put on information or evidence to say, judge, this is why I think you should hold him with no bond, because this is his record. He's done these crimes, been convicted of this. He's done this while he was out on bond before, mm-hmm. he's this. And just make the showing, and then the judge can say, okay, I'm going to deny bond.
Now the judge with an eyes law will have the liberty of just saying, not in this case, no bond.
Voters have to vote to pass that amendment to the Constitution.
Since it passed the legislature unanimously,
mm-hmm.
I feel a good feeling of it when it goes for the people.
Generally, the way they write those amendments, they're written in such a way that everybody
don't get me started.
It, you know,
and you know we correct. Like, just a side note here, not to take away from the sheriff's time, but that was so bad in our state that maybe 7 or 8 years ago, in session, they passed a law to put the bond language or the constitutional amendments in a more normal speech.
Yeah, layman's terms.
And it's still, even though it's better, it's still. Like, why the K just can't write it like normal people speak, I don't know, but they don't. Let's see. The David says, are they going to be adding more parking to the new community corrections building so people don't have to continue parking on the street?
Yes. I think to the southwest of the building, they're working on a parking lot there, but it is a parking nightmare down there right now.
Let's see. So many of these. So this question here, Dale had a question. Does the sheriff or Mobile Police Department have real-time access to the private camera systems, such as the ones installed and posted in Spring Hill? Have these systems produced any results? Shouldn't the person who got away from the Bristol Court robberies and shooting have already been identified and arrested, if so?
I know a lot of the cameras, we do have real-time access to them. The Mobile Police Department's Technology Center coordinates all of that and will recommend county neighborhoods tie into the city system, and we do at the sheriff's office have access to a lot of the cameras, and we work very well with them and other agencies in this area on these camera systems.
Dave in Gulf
Shores. I don't know why the Bristol court case, I don't know enough about it, but I would have thought that the suspect that ran away, that somebody should have had a picture of him.
And probably the description for the person shot, too, in that. Dave in Gulf Shores said, does Metro have cable TV? So does the jail have Metro? Does Metro have cable TV or the internet? What's it like?
We do have TV, and it's pushed through cable, obviously, but, you know, we don't have pay-per-view or you know, HBO and that kind of stuff. We have the news channels and some other things like that, and so the inmates are able to watch that. They do have the ability to pay a fee to send emails and receive emails, but that goes through a system where people look at the message first, and it also intercepts nudity and stuff like that.
Okay. Curtis says, my cousin was killed by a guy that was charged with rape, released from prison, shot and killed my cousin, arrested, given bond again, and then shot someone else on Christmas Day several years ago. Case is well known because the guy was an Alabama football commit, one charged with rape the first time. So there's somebody who was the
first-hand experience. That's what we've been talking about.
Nick asked. Nick said, "Hey, what happened to three strikes and you're out?"
Once the newness of it wore off, then there was movement to say, "Hey, we can't be giving everybody life without parole. We've got to start." And they started amending that law to do away with it.
It seems a lot like the sentencing issue. Like there's a splash in the headline.
When you have something
and
like three strikes and you're out, you can always find a sad case. You say, well, you know, the guy probably didn't deserve this because it was, you know, he only committed a couple of shopliftings that were felony shopliftings and something else, and the third time he got it, you know. And of course the judge said, well, I had to sentence him this because that's the law. And so that, you know, you find those isolated instances. And so I've no doubt discretion on the part of the judges is probably the best way, but what happens sometimes, you end up having judges that abuse that discretion, and so then the pendulum swings the other way, and that's one of the things that created the federal sentencing guidelines, is because you had federal judges that answered to no one once they took the bench, could just let somebody walk if they wanted to, and so Congress got fed up and passed the laws that mandated they sentence to certain terms. That's back in the mid-'80s, if I remember right.
Might be shocking to folks, but I think, you know, three strikes and you're out, I don't think was a good law. I think there are extenuating circumstances, but you got to have the right judges in there making the decisions. You know,
that's right.
I mean there's some people three strikes, I believe you are out, and some people there may be.
Look, there are some people that rehabilitate themselves, and you know they could mess up in a short period of time, commit a number of serious crimes, and then you know rehabilitate themselves and go the rest of their life maybe without committing another crime.
I'm going to say what needs to be said on that. How much of that is driven by drugs? How many of the people that are in jail and then on into prison are there because of drugs at some level?
Oh, I think by and far the majority of them are.
I'm not saying nonviolent. I'm saying the drug trade, shooting people over drugs, getting high, doing robberies, those kind of things. I mean, I'm not talking about this idea that there's nonviolent drug offender. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about violent people. But the reason they're violent is they had a drug habit and they went and knocked over a store or something like that.
That's right. I mean, the drug habit leads to violent crime, or it leads to mental illness, and then the mental illness causes violent behavior.
Is it 50%
of the ones involved or have a drug problem? Oh, easily.
Okay.
Point
that part out as we roll to the news. Coming right back, more with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
1248 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. And our guest, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, your chance to ask the sheriff. A lot of good questions coming in here. John says, yes, some people do rehabilitate themselves. In the 70s, I went to prison. Now I'm one of the more well-known drug counselors and therapists in the area.
Yeah, good, so. good for him. He admits it. But, you know, that's one of the things, I guess, the problem with it. You don't really go around telling people, oh, just to let you know, I'm a convicted felon. I got in trouble, you know, 25 years ago. It's not something people want to openly brag about.
Right, but I want folks rehabilitate. I mean, that's one of the back to the prison talk as well. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's being soft on crime to rehabilitate somebody who's getting out. Not one of these,
right.
not one of the murderous animals, but I'm talking about people that screwed up, that are going to see the outside.
That's right.
I mean, I'm to trying to get them as back to society as possible.
I mean, that's the big movement, and I know the state's trying to do that, give them some type of trade.
Is that wrong? Am I wrong in thinking that?
No, I think that's a good thought. I mean, we all agree with that. Those of us in law enforcement, I think many of us support.
I mean, if we're going to let them out.
That's right. If you're going to let them out, if they don't have some way to get a job and earn a living, they're going to go right back to what they were doing.
Hey, speaking of arrest, something you and I have talked over time about, now Baldwin County got the arrest yesterday on the catalytic converter theft. Another group of them. Where are we in Mobile County? What's going on with this?
I think the thefts are way down. You know, we've had spikes in it a few times and very bad about, a year or so ago, a year and a half. But we've sort of gotten a handle on it and have slowed it down.
By putting people in jail?
Well, by putting people in jail and trying our best to hold the second-hand places more accountable and who they're buying from. And some of them were not properly recording the records, I think, and so they... We tightened up on their restrictions. And
they were going out of state. Some of these weren't.
Yeah.
Right?
And I'm still, that's the way a lot of that stuff is today. That's one of the problems we have. You know, people steal stuff, take it across state lines. And, you know, frequently we have stuff stolen in Mobile and see it advertised on Craigslist or somewhere like that in Mississippi somewhere. Vice versa. You know, it's not just them buying our stolen stuff. I'm sure our people buy their stolen stuff.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Let's talk. You mentioned Craigslist. Let's talk. It was not in my notes, Sheriff, but. Mm-hmm. Ask you just a regular, this is my question, a Sean question. When I see somebody, and I know y'all use, you know, technology and the web to look at things, but when I see somebody, and there's probably, in a lot of these cases, legitimate reason, but when somebody's selling 25 anchors, you know, boat anchors on Craigslist, or that are used looking, or somebody's got, you know, X number of pieces of marine equipment, sometimes the stuff just, like, you're not both go out on the boat. There's no reason I'm ever going to have 25 anchors or, you know, 20 different bottom machines. Or I see that on there. I go, can you investigate that? Can you?
You know, sometimes we do.
You know what I'm talking about? When you see something, you just go, there's no way.
That's right. You know, and rods and reels are a big, easy thing to steal. You know, I see rods and reels sometimes at sale at flea markets and garage, you know, yard.
But here's the thing. So if I get run over when I walk out of here today, old truck runs me over, and the missus decides to sell rod and reels, there may or may not be, if she can find them all, a pile of them. It would look questionable because maybe I have more than I should have. But anchors or something, you know, it just seems like there are just multiple boat parts. I don't know. It just is stuff like that stands out to me.
It's been a problem, you know, the theft of boat motors and stuff like that.
Gotten me in my lifetime.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to solve because, you know, a lot of times they'll steal the motors and then they'll part them out. You know, a sophisticated crook that knows what they're doing, just slide a few into somebody that might sell used marine repair parts and stuff like that. It's just difficult. And then some of your states, you know, don't have titles on boats and things like that. It's just why we don't, I don't know. But, somebody's always opposed to government restrictions, I guess.
I feel good that I cleared my conscience on that. Just sometimes I look at, you mentioned Craigslist, I look at it and go, come on. John also added, I have complete and total pardons for all my crimes. That's good, at least in my opinion. Yes. Bob's saying, hey, Sheriff, can you explain what the benefit is of buying a catalytic converter and why people are stealing them?
Well, the reason they're stealing them, they have precious metals in them and they have a real high resale value at the scrap market yard. They don't really reuse them as a used catalytic converter. They steal them and sell them And then these places that buy them will build up maybe 100 at a time or a couple hundred, and then they'll ship them off to these industries that take the precious metals out of them and pay them for the precious metals.
And that stuff is that rhodium and palladium. Yeah, those are like Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins said, it's the highest priced metals.
Precious metals, yeah. Several thousand dollars for like an ounce of it.
It's over what we always think platinum. He said, no, it's more than platinum.
Yeah. And some of the catalytic converter vehicles, you know, when they were designed, they used more than others, and the thieves know which ones, and some of the dealers that buy them, you go to the right deals, will pay for different ones, different values. And then, like I say, once it gets shipped out of town in huge lots of hundreds or 500 mm-hmm. at a time, you know, because I got to researching it last year about how some of these places won't buy less than like 500 or so. You
right.
know, and they're up in places like Detroit and other areas. And, of course, that's one of the reasons the automobile manufacturers are moving so quick to electric vehicles is because of the cost of the catalytic converter.
You're kidding me.
No, I read an article, you know, in the business section several months ago, a year ago, that was one of the things to get away because a catalytic converter added like $1,500, $2,000 to the cost of a new vehicle. An electric, you know, doesn't require a catalytic converter.
I thought it was going to lead to people lowering their vehicles. As I've said, you know, I used to laugh at somebody who would lower their pickup, you know, but they're laughing last because it takes a very skinny person to get under there and get it. Alan says, please ask the sheriff to comment on the high crime rate east of I-65, danger to unaccompanied persons in that area, especially at night. I don't know if that's really more of an MPD question.
Yeah, that's an MPD question. I'm not familiar with, we've got crime spread out. So obviously some areas of a city or some areas of a county have higher crime rates. We all know that. It doesn't take a police officer to figure that out.
All right, got a few more minutes here. Let's talk some politics.
Sure.
Outside of law enforcement and new city council to be seated in November.
Yes.
Your feelings on annexation going forward. I know you have you're pushing to go to a simple majority.
That's right. I'd like to see a simple majority. I think it's a better form of government for the city. I think that they're handcuffed with having a supermajority. I think it hurts the minorities as much as if you're going to say it helps a majority or something. I think it hurts the minorities, and they've just been sold a bill of goods. But City of Mobile really needs to grow. They've lost millions of dollars by not having growth. We're one of the only cities in this, you know, around us like the City of Mobile that hasn't grown and hasn't grown tremendously over the last year. We're smaller today than we were 55 years ago. And the last census, we lost another several thousand people. But there's tens of thousands of people sitting on the border of Mobile that would like to come in. And if we get our numbers up, it would bring about more federal dollars in public safety grants, but federal housing grants and all kinds of others. And with this COVID, we would have got millions and millions of dollars more had we already, you know, grown. But I'm hopefully optimistic that because in all of the council debates, that was one of the issues, do you support annexation? And it seemed like the majority of the candidates either came out and said they supported it, or the others that didn't say they supported it, they were kind of talked around it, you know, which I thought was not good because it was really a simple issue. I mean, the issue's been there for a long, long time. So they should have easily known whether they would or wouldn't. But they were walking the fence. And so there's, you know, I think there's, hopefully there'll be five or six votes on there that will do it. But here's the good thing.
Well, that's all it takes, then.
If they don't do it, then maybe the new council members will say, you know what, we do need to change that supermajority. I watched the debates, all of them, and they were asked that question too, and some of them said, well, I think things are working pretty good the way it is. But I think they were just scared, wanting to walk that tightrope. But if they see that it's not working, here's the good thing. Because the turnout was so low this last time, the number of signatures on a petition drive dropped by 1,500.
What do you mean by that?
You have to have 10% of the people that voted in the last election, the numbers, you have to have 10% sign a petition to change or amend the form of government.
So and that means you have to have 2,300?
Well, I think there was 32,000 or something that voted this past time, and so you got to have 3,200.
Yeah, okay, 3,200 in the—so—
Yeah, and previously it was like right at 5,000.
All right, so—
49.95, I think, is what it was the previous
time. So how
did
people sign up?
Well, I'm going to not push it right now until we see the new council seated and see what they do. And
then maybe in December you're back talking with me about that.
Yeah. We'll see how soon the council acts on whether or not they're going to try to have annexation. It's the best thing for the city. And people sometimes, what's the sheriff involved in that? Well, you know, I'm born and raised Native Mobilian. I understand business. I'm not just a police officer, you know, or just a sheriff. I want to see the Mobile thrive, and we've got some good leaders in Mobile, and we've got citizens that deserve good government.
All right, Sheriff, as always, we appreciate your time with us.
Follow us on Team Sheriff.
All right, very good. We'll be right back. Hour number two, Congressman Bo Brooks joins us next.